Hey guys, welcome to Ride Owl Politics. My name is Ariana Mendez, your host. I'm a Cuban-American attorney from South Florida and a Republican political activist and analyst. I'm very excited for today's show. There's a lot happening. Great interview with Randy Ross. I first became acquainted with Randy Ross. I was watching a Trump rally back in August of 2016, and he was one of the presenters at that rally. He gave a short 6-minute speech about how he made his way to the Trump campaign, how he had struggled being a gay conservative. And he was a very powerful speaker, and I think he made a major impact. And we became Facebook friends at the time. And I wanted to invite him on the show because I had seen him running around on Facebook with a truck with President Trump and Vice President Pence face on it. And I thought it was so cool and so awesome. And considering he had been involved with the Trump campaign in 2016, I really wanted to get an idea of what he's been experiencing running around Florida with this truck. And I invited him on the show, and we had a great conversation. So without further ado, let's jump right in. Hey, Randy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be on your show. Thank you.
Well, Randy, you and I have been Facebook friends for a while, and I've been following your adventures in Orlando, and you're really quite admirable. Not only are you a marketing executive, you're the host of Front Porch Chats with Randy Ross, and you're also very active on the political scene. So you wear many hats and you wear them well. So it's great to have you. Your input is going to be definitely interesting.
Well, thank you.
I liked your episode with Jackie Siegel on your Front Porch Chat. That was great. She was it was nice to see a different side of her.
You know, one of the things that was interesting about that segment was that was right before her daughter passed away. And, you know, so it was very interesting. I've always felt that a lot of people just don't know the Jackie that I know. You know, so I was kind of glad that we had that opportunity to be with her, and sad that she lost her daughter, but I'm really happy to see how the Siegels are handling, you know, dealing with drug addiction and dealing with some of the situations that come on the other side of that. So, yeah, it was a great time. I'm a big fan of Jackie's.
Oh, yeah, and the work that her and her husband are doing to fight the opiate crisis is very admirable. So I'm glad that she was able to find some comfort in that cause.
Awesome.
But yeah, so it was great to see that. A lot has been happening this week, and I wanted to get your opinion on a few things. But first, I wanted to ask you about that awesome Trump truck that you've been showcasing on Facebook. So yeah. To explain to our audience, it's this really big, great truck that he's been photographing himself around with in Florida, and it has Vice President Pence, President Trump on it, the American flag, Americana all the way. And so tell us about that. What's up with that?
Well, you know, that actually started in 2016. We had another truck during the campaign of 2016 that a gentleman out of Kentucky actually had loaned to a friend of mine. And we took it around and we saw what type of positive reaction we got. So when I was putting this effort together now, I reached out to a loyal Trump supporter who actually owns a dealership here in Orlando, and dealerships throughout the state of Florida, Nissan dealerships. And it was like the quickest ask I've ever had. I said, we'd like to get this truck to wrap and drive around the state. And he's like, okay, good, done. And that's kind of where it started. You know, it's been about through 13 or 14 states at this point, but it's primarily focused here in Florida. It's designed, you know, you go down the street and you either get thumbs up or something else, right? So but for the most part, we get very positive reaction to it. I took it over to Daytona Beach over the weekend. I took it yesterday to Cape Canaveral. I'll be taking it back to Cape Canaveral on Saturday when the president comes back in. It's really just an opportunity for people to, you know, kind of just say, oh, cool, I like it. I'm on board. I support that, you know? So it's actually been a very wonderful opportunity for us to explore, you know, what type of reaction we're going to get in a market. You have to remember, I live in Orlando, Florida. In Orange County, Florida, which is where Orlando is, there's 140,000 more Democrats than there are Republicans. And so we were upside down when I started this journey back in 2015, and we're still upside down. But the flip side of that is if we can get enough independents and such to get on board, we win again. And that's really what the focus is.
So tell me, what's the environment like in that Orlando area now with COVID-19 and the lockdowns and all the precautions and guidelines? How are people reacting? What's your sense?
We're pretty lucky in our state that our governor was extremely aggressive in wanting to follow the science, but get our state back open as quickly as possible. You know, Walt Disney World, I believe, is opening on July 15th. Sooner than that is going to be SeaWorld and Universal. As a matter of fact, Universal has opened their nighttime entertainment complex already. I just think, you know, the bottom line is, and I hate to sound so cavalier about it, but I followed all the precautions, but I've not worn a mask. The only time I've worn a mask is when I took my mom to her rheumatologist appointment, and that was because I was required to. You know, I am a healthy person. I feel like in some ways this whole thing has been designed to a certain extent, and it's actually impacted the healthy people more than it has been the folks that might be in the opposite side of the situation. So I've supported the president in every step of his process, and I'm ready for the entire country to be opened again. You know, I did my internship at Walt Disney World in 1987. I moved back to Orlando in 1993. I've lived here this entire time, and this is a, like it or not, this is a tourism town. And so we have to have these opportunities. We have to have, you know, the wonderful space of.
And do you think people are ready to go back, or is there still this fear of infection?
I think that there's no secret that there are some people that are still cautious. When I go to the grocery store, I see some people looking like they're ready for a Star Wars adventure. They've got the mask on, they've got the gloves, mm-hmm. They've got all these things, you know, and I'm walking in. Of course, I don't have that because I'm not trying to defend my appeal over theirs. What I'm saying is that I've talked to a lot of folks in the medical profession that the masks are really not what people are kind of envisioning them to be. Imagine somebody that puts on a mask, and if it's not the N95 mask, it's really not going to protect them. And we see this time and time again. We see people that, you know, work in the drywall industry and all the dust that comes around them and things like that. What I can tell you is living in downtown Orlando, when I walk around the lake with my dog Trumpy, there are people that, you know, they still caution themselves. They push themselves from one side of the sidewalk to the other. I can tell you this is America and we operate on freedom. And if we don't get ready and open this country to a total opportunity for everybody, every business, et cetera, we're gonna go down some streets and we're gonna see businesses boarded up forever. And, you know, I think about iDrive, International Drive. Most people that have been to Orlando, Florida, are very familiar with International Drive. It's kind of our, you know, off the beat, if you will, from Disney World and Universal and SeaWorld. And there are many hotels there that may never open again. We've really got to think about what we're doing by keeping everything closed. And so I think that for the most part, we have to think about how we open and when do we open. I went to dinner the other day in downtown Orlando, and you know, we now are at 50% capacity. We're allowed to go to certain spaces. And I'm very concerned that more people are not comfortable getting out and going out. I really wish more people, even if they think they need to wear the mask, just get out there and support business. Because if we don't do that, we're going to not have business to go back to when we're really ready to go out there and have, you know, Sunday fun day with our friends.
Absolutely. And looking into November, how do you think this is going to affect grassroots organization, campaigning on the ground level? Because we are limited now. Face masks, people are going to be hesitant to get together in large groups. Like, how are you looking into November as we get ready for Biden versus Trump?
You know, in 2016, and I was the 2016 chairman for Trump in Orange County. So I used to think, oh my gosh, you know, how are we going to do this? And what I learned in 2016 is that the best person to run the campaign is Donald Trump. And the reality is in 2020, the best person to run the campaign again is going to be Donald Trump. And what I mean by that is, it's there's all kinds of grassroots initiatives out there. We raised more money leading into this pandemic on the Republican side than any presidential candidate had raised before. And I'm part of that process because I sit on the president's campaign finance reelection committee. So it's like we go into that and guess what? We're going to win again. And we're going to win because I believe, you know, Democrats kind of tipped their hat just a little too much. They decided they wanted to use the pandemic as an opportunity to make us feel like, you know, we should stay in our homes and we should be home and we're not allowed to go out and everything. But guess what? Once we did what they said about the curve, you know, whether it was Dr. Fauci or, you know, et cetera, you know, we got to narrow the curve. What we ultimately did is we did everything they told us to do. And guess what? Here we are. We're ready to go now. It's going into July. You know, we have Walt Disney World opening, like I said, in July. And I got to be honest with you, I can't imagine wearing a mask in Orlando, Florida, in 95 to 100 degree heat with humidity and everything that's going to come along with that. So I have to trust that, you know, tourists are going to come back. I know my sister's coming down here in a couple weeks and they're coming down to vacation here under the pretense that they had already decided to come here. And that's what we have to focus on, is that people trust this environment, that they want to come back to what they know. They want to come back to, you know, the City Beautiful and, you know, Walt Disney World, Universal, SeaWorld, and everything that's associated with it. And I think that's where we're going to head. I think we're going to be okay. I think it's going to be an interesting learning curve. I wouldn't want to be the person at Walt Disney World that is going to go around and say, oh, your mask isn't on properly. Oh, you just got off of a roller coaster. Oh, put that back on. I just can't even imagine being in that space. But guess what? That's not my job. So,
yeah, I mean, that's a difficult balance, trying to maintain that high standard of customer service that Disney is known for, but still trying to enforce the guidelines. So that's going to be an interesting dance they're going to have to play.
That's correct.
I am a big Disney fan. I go multiple times a year, so it's very sad that it's been closed this long. How many people depend on Disney World for employment in the Orlando area?
I came here. My family brought me here during the opening in 1971. We drove here as a family for years and years and years. So when I did my internship at Walt Disney World in 1987, it was kind of like coming home. And then when I moved here in 1993, you know, it's partially because I just love the weather. I love the environment. It made a lot of sense for me. So you fast forward to the fact that, you know, that's not part of my life anymore. I mean, working in a theme park, but I just have so many people that I know that are either at a corporate level. My niece works at a corporate level within the organization. Even one of my nieces recently did the college program and they got out. I hate to say they got out just in time, but they kind of got through it just in time, meaning that when this virus hit and all the fear was what drove so much of this. You know, my one niece that works in marketing, she went back to Indiana, you know, to stay with her family for a while because there wasn't any work to do. They were, you know, they couldn't go and do all the things that they normally do. What I can hope for and what I fear at the same time is that so many of these folks that are, you know, what is it, 50, 60, 70,000 people that work in Disney alone, it could be more than that. You got Universal, you've got SeaWorld. I just hope they are available to come back to work, you know, that they want to do this again. I could see many people might have just went home and said, I don't want to do it anymore. I can't do that anymore. That worries me greatly, that we won't have. It's always been a concern in Central Florida when it comes to qualified staff to run everything, whether it be theme parks, etc. And now we have this in an environment where we need so many people ready to go back and hit the ground running. So I just hope that they're ready to do that and be part of this again. You know, one of the wonderful things that the theme parks did, at least that many of them did, is they kept some of them being paid. It's great that the country kept people being paid, but now it's time to get back to work. You know, we can't do that forever. This is not a socialist country. We have to get back to work and, you know, let people be entertained again and let them enjoy wonderful environments like Walt Disney World and Universal and SeaWorld and all the other things that we have here, even Gatorland, you know, it just opened recently. So hopefully we haven't lost a lot of those folks, because if we lose them, the recruitment process could be brutal. It could take time.
And the training, because it's not easy to maintain that high level of customer service in all those companies.
Absolutely. I mean, if anyone really understood how much work goes into, it's called Traditions 1 and 2, which is the Disney process. I remember one time in 1987 when I was doing my internship at Disney, and Michael Eisner surprised us and came into one of the sessions, and his comparison was that, you know, if you can, you know, create a Big Mac in Orlando and a Big Mac in Tokyo and they taste the same, that's a system, that's a process. And that's what we have to remember. What is so critical about this is that people have to remember, how do we get right back on track? How do we make the parks as clean as possible? How do we make them as safe as possible? You know, I can tell you that my personal feeling is that I'm not sure I'm comfortable going to a theme park in the middle of July with a face mask on. I'm sure many tourists will do that. I think that when we get to the other side of this and people are a little bit more comfortable being themselves again, I think that's where you see tourism bounce back. And I think we'll bounce back bigger and better than ever, actually.
I agree. I think this economy has good bones. It was great going into this pandemic, and I think we can start up quickly. I think that there is an appetite out there for things to go back to normal. So I agree with you. So I want to go back to August 11th, 2016 in Kissimmee, Florida. And there's a speech you gave at a Trump campaign rally. And that's actually the first time that I became acquainted with you. And you're standing in front of a lectern, and behind you is a row of alternating American flags and Florida state flags. And you deliver a speech just under 6 minutes. And there's a quote that really jumped out at me. I like, quote, "I prefer a president that is not politically correct over one that lies and panders to communities of minorities that she does not represent." She, you were referring to then candidate Clinton.
Right.
And I wanted to know, with your marketing background and your bread and butter is, you know, optics and messaging and how to present a brand, what attracted you to the Trump brand?
I can tell you that when he came down the escalator, I was on, well, first of all, I got to tell you, I auditioned for The Apprentice, but I didn't get it.
Okay.
So, but when he came down the escalator, I was on board. I just didn't quite know how. And a person in a local publication sent me an email and said, "You know, Randy, they're looking for chairman for all 67 counties in Florida." And I was like, "Okay." So I applied. And to be honest with you, I didn't get a response. And I'm good with yes or no, but I'm not good with something in the middle. And I kept calling and I kept emailing, and then one day I showed up at the Orange County Republican Executive Committee office, and nice little lady sitting there at the desk, and she goes, "Can you sit down for a minute?" And I sat down, and she handed me a manila folder filled with resumes, and she said, "You know, Randy, they just don't want Trump to organize in Orange County." And I said, "Well, why?" You know, I couldn't even, because, you know, I worked in politics, but I'd never worked on a presidential campaign. And I was like, well, I don't understand. She goes, "I really think you need to reach out to Joe Gruters." Joe Gruters at the time was the state co-chairman. He was a state House representative. Now he is the chairman of the Republican Party of Florida. And I called him a couple of times. And finally, one day he called me back and I told him what my challenge was. And he goes, "Well, let me call your chairman there, the AUCREC here in Orlando." The rest is kind of history, because they basically say, "Okay, go ahead and let him do it." Because, you know, if they were so thinking that we couldn't win, why didn't they want us to organize? And of course, you know, I'm an openly gay conservative that was running the Trump campaign, you know, in a town that is run by Democrats. And the upside of it is, we had over 1,200 volunteers in 2016. That's unbelievable that many people came out to organize and support this president. You know, and to be honest with you, once we won in 2016, I kind of thought it was over. I thought the job was over. I, you know, I, because I, I, it wasn't paid. I didn't get paid to be the chairman. It was free. And so, and a lot of people can't believe that either. It's like, why did you do all that? You didn't get paid for it. And so it's like, you know, in 2017, we're getting ready to go to the inauguration. I kind of think it's then, that's it. That's the final straw. We are done. And of course, that's when the president announced he was running for re-election. And it just became another fight. And it wasn't a fight that we weren't afraid to go with him on. We were right there behind him, almost like a battle, like you're going into war. And you know, and I gotta be honest with you, there are many Republicans that don't like that a gay conservative in Orange County got him over the victory line. But we did that together. There are many people to this day that I battle with because they can't quite figure out why a gay conservative, one, how can you be gay and Republican? And gosh, how can you be gay and support this president? I was interviewed by international media last couple of days, and there was a lady that was near us that heard my conversation with the interviewer, and she just kind of, once it was over, we asked her for something simple. We said, will you take our picture, because we wanted to get a picture of me and the camera crew. And she said no, and I was like, why, what is there a problem? She goes, I can't believe you as a gay man support this president. And I was like, well, tell me exactly what he's done to go against the gay community. And of course, she could never cite anything. And the reality of the situation is its president has done nothing to interfere with the LGBTQ movement. He's actually been extremely, think about it. Do you think they didn't know I was gay? My boss on the campaign, one of my bosses anyway, was a lesbian in a 14-year relationship. This president does not care about your sexual orientation. He cares about results. He cares about people that know how to get the job done. And I'm pretty lucky that they, somewhere in the process, and you go back to the speech that you're referencing, figured out that I was one of those people that knew how to get the job done. So when Pulse occurred and I got that call from the campaign, Randy, we'd like you to introduce the president on the stage in Kissimmee, Florida. I was like, well, what am I supposed to say? What do you want? And they were like, well, just be yourself.
That's a very interesting story, and I like how you had different experiences with both sides, the left and the right, to your support of Trump. So that's very interesting. Last week we had a guest on the show. He came out as a gay conservative on the show, and that he was very nervous about it. He thought that he was going to lose friendships in the process because he had a lot of liberal friends. And I was wondering, you are a successful gay conservative. Would you have any advice for anybody listening right now that may not really fit into the conservative box, but has those conservative points of view and is afraid to speak out and support Trump?
You know, that's a very interesting question, because as you led me into that, I was pausing because I was a little emotional. It was easier for me to come out in 2002 as a gay man than it was for me to be an openly gay Trump supporter. Doesn't mean I would take it back. It doesn't mean I regret it. It doesn't mean anything. It just means that I lost all of my gay friends. I have maybe just a handful that I still talk to. What I can tell you, the good news is that all along, during the last, this started in 2015, that's when I was tapped to be the chairman in Orange County, and now we're in 2020. All along, I started seeing people see my courage as their courage, and they started, you know, thank you, Randy, or messaging me, can I call you, I'm afraid to say what you're saying, but I support what you're saying. That's not the way it should be. It no person, because of their political beliefs, should ever be shamed. And I feel like that is, you got to remember, I was a Republican until 2002 when I came out at 36 years old. My friends were like, oh, you can't be a Republican. You've got to be a Democrat. And I'm like, okay. Because, you know, I'm still kind of getting used to the whole lifestyle at that point.
Sure.
It would take maybe 3 or 4 years before I would realize, okay, you're still a conservative. And a conservative is not a better person than a liberal. It's just your value system is a little bit different. And I think that I tell people all the time, and I tell gay people this all the time, stop pretending that gay marriage is going to get overturned. That's not how it works. It takes an entirely new case to get gay marriage overturned. So it doesn't work quite like that. I also stop pretending that that's the objective of this administration. I've been very fortunate to be around the president multiple times. Of the five pictures I have with him, four of them were fundraising for him. I've been in on opportunities with the vice president. Never once have I ever felt that this president judged me for who I really am. As a matter of fact, I think one of the things that the president, every time I get to see him and I tell him who I am and where I'm from, he doesn't say what's going on in the gay community. What he says is, what's really happening in Florida? Tell me, how do you think we're really doing? And at the first time he asked me that was in 2016 at the University of Central Florida rally. And I'm confident I sounded like an idiot because I couldn't believe he really wanted to hear what I had to say. Let me tell you what, though, every time he's ever asked me since, I've always been ready, including June of last year when we kicked the campaign off again here in Orlando. And it's not always what he wants to hear. I'm making sure he understands that I heard the question. I want you to hear the answer. And guess what? I appreciate you listening. That is something that nobody's ever, whenever somebody comes after me, out in public or whatever, and they want to make fun of me or whatever, I'm like, how many times have you had an opportunity to have that type of interaction, not just with someone you helped get elected, but someone who is the president of the United States? Mm-hmm. It's just so cool. It's just amazing. I mean, I hope that more people get that opportunity.
And do you think that's the sort of secret of his success, that he does have that common touch, that people connect with him? He's authentic. He doesn't seem scripted or robotic.
I think it's absolutely, if you go to a rally, I mean, this truck has been, I don't know, maybe through 20 states already, going to rallies and different things like that. And I watch how people react, interact, and it's like nothing I'll ever experience again in my life. And I'm confident of that. If somebody said to me, Randy, you're going to support this candidate in 2024, and here's who it is, and I don't know if I could do that. What I've done for the last 5 years has just changed my life. But I don't know if someone had said to me, here's what you're going to be doing. In 2015, it was a rough year in my life in the beginning. And if someone had said to me, by the way, you're going to end up working on the Trump campaign, you're going to end up doing this, that, and the other. God decided that I was going to do it this way. Not me. Because I was fighting for something at that stage of my life to kind of reinvent myself. And I got the wonderful opportunity to reinvent myself alongside the 45th president of the United States. Who can say they did that,
Yeah, that's once in a lifetime opportunity right there.
And that's why I'm so, when I meet people, especially those in the LGBT community, but when I meet people and I'm driving the truck down the road and there are people that can't wait to roll their window down to show me their hat or give me a thumbs up. Cause when you're in the truck, we can see out of it, but they can't see in it. Mm-hmm. So they don't really know, if anyone's even seeing them. And it's all, it's always fun because just like yesterday, I could barely get down A1A, which is near where the launch pad is, to get the truck to even to a parking spot with people, trying to get me to pull over. And listen, it's just a truck with pictures and with images, but it shows me how this president has reignited this spirit of patriotism in this country that in my lifetime, and I hate to admit it on your show, but I'll be 55 in October, and I can't imagine that nowhere outside of my remembering Reagan have I ever felt this level of patriotism that comes along with supporting this president. So it's wonderful. The show we have on the radio every Tuesday night, Trump and Tuesday. I'm so excited to see Kayleigh McEnally now elevated to White House press secretary, because this is someone that I was seeing on the road when I was traveling, but at the same time we were having on the show. And it's almost like this, and maybe this is how it always is, I can just tell you how it's been for me, it's like you're developing and creating this family, and it's an amazing family. And And I just know that we can do this one more time. I don't think I could do this again in 2024. You got to pay me a lot of money. But can I do it for the next 7 or 8 months? Can I get us to this other side? Can I help, you know, create this energy and motivation and excitement to make sure that people recognize and realize that this is the president we need right now? I can recall, and I won't tell you the news station, but on the election day of 2016, I had a news reporter come find me in the middle of some street in downtown Orlando where I'm sign waving with some of the amazing folks that came in from Tennessee to help us. And he goes, "Can I interview you real quickly?" I'm like, "Yeah." And I'm like, he goes, "Randy, tell me what you really think is going to happen tonight." And I looked at him and I said, "I think we're going to win." And he looked at me like I had three eyes. And it would be a couple of weeks after that, that he would come to post interview. We've won at that point. And he goes, "You know, Randy, I went back to the station that day and I told everybody you were a Looney Tune, that you thought you guys were going to win." And I think what they didn't know, and what we knew, and what I think the grassroots initiative still understands today, is that this president is speaking on in a way that we all have been wanting someone to speak for a long time. Even his current commercial series, and I'm watching what they're putting out there, they're reminding you he's a little rough around the edges. What they're also reminding you of is that he is doing exactly what we elected him to do. And I think that's what we want for another 4 years. You know, what we need in 2024, I don't know. I don't know what that person looks like. I don't know who that is. What I can tell you is what we need now is we need him to finish the job. We need to clean up that swamp. We need someone to get in there and keep reminding us via this amazing mechanism that he has through social media to keep us alert and aware of what's going on and truthfully know what's going on. And know that, guess what? The media really isn't our friend. We've all known that for years. I mean, think back all the way to Nixon versus Kennedy. You know, when they used that whole way of the sweat on Nixon and all. The media is really not a friend of any politician. But the bottom line is that we support this president 150%. You look at the boats going up and down the canals headed to this part of Florida and that part of Florida and going down to Mar-a-Lago. That would never happen. There's not going to be anybody driving around Orlando, Florida like I am in a Biden truck. And if they are, no one cares. When you drive around in a Trump truck with the president in the front seat giving the thumbs up and the vice president in the back and it says Trump 2020, that's the spark of patriotism and enthusiasm that I probably will never see again in my life.
And that's a good point. I mean, and that explains why Trump right now has 96% approval among Republicans. Those are historic levels for any Republican president. And that's the thing. The media doesn't understand the Trump phenomenon. To be fair, the left didn't understand the Obama phenomenon. So we were not trying to, we couldn't understand how to beat him. And the media doesn't understand Trump. So there you don't understand how to beat him. So it's always this interesting dynamic where they're calling out Trump for being off script. That's what people liked about him.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny. When he goes off script at a rally, people go nuts. You know, what they like about him, and I mean, because of course I work in the media, so I'm sitting in the media section, and I have on a Trump t-shirt usually or a pin or something, and I'm clapping, and, you know, CNN, Fox, all these people are looking at me like, "You're supposed to be fair and balanced." Well, they aren't fair and balanced. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting there supporting him. And what you see, though, whether you're in New Hampshire, New Mexico, Texas, I don't know how to explain it to you. When they do, you know the different songs they play, right? I'm sure you've been to a rally. So
yes.
When you get there and they finally do "God Bless the USA," that's the key. You know, that's the song that is bringing him on the stage. And you know, it's so funny because it's just amazing because people, it's just crazy energy and excitement. So I hope we get those opportunities again, even if it's September. I don't care when it is. I think at some point they're going to have to let us get back together and be around people. But, you know, I think people are just longing for that. And I think we'll get there again soon.
Would you support moving the RNC convention from North Carolina to Florida?
Oh gosh, yes. You know, when I saw Governor DeSantis welcome that, I was disappointed to see that the Tampa mayor, not surprised, but disappointed to see that the Tampa mayor had decided he didn't want that. Let me tell you something. This is a red state. We don't know what's going to happen this cycle, but this is still a red state. And this has been a very large part of the president's campaign efforts in 2016. We all know you got to win Florida to win the presidency. His residence is now here. What better way? I hope that when they decide where they're going to go, I hope they make that decision to come to Florida. And I hope that the RNC convention would be part of that consideration, because guess what? If North Carolina doesn't want this for whatever reason, I guarantee you the folks in North Carolina will come to Florida for this convention. It would be an amazing opportunity. And, you know, in some ways, I wish they had considered Florida from the get-go. I think they understand that they've got to be, you know, all over here and there to make things work. But if North Carolina doesn't want it, trust me, Florida does. And if Florida doesn't get it, Texas will get it. You know, that's the way it has to work, because we got to stay focused on the fact that this is not about a popular vote. This is about electoral college vote. And that's what we have to focus on.
Absolutely. And one final question. Why are you a conservative?
Oh, wow. I think it's because I believe in everything I'm a Trumplican. I think to put me in that space of calling me a conservative, I'm really in the middle, but I love being considered and working on infrastructure. I think that the folks that I know that are legal immigrants have clearly educated me why legal immigration is so much more important over this whole illegal immigration process and border control. So I'm right there on that issue. You know, up until this time when we had to put $3 trillion into the economy in order to get this back, I was still believing the fact, and I still think we can, that, you know, we got to balance our budget. We got to work on these different things. The bottom line is I am not about social issues. I think that, you know, like I said, when people tell me, oh, Randy, he's against gay marriage, he's against abortion, and all those are all valid. That's not true. That's not true at all. That's nothing this administration has done outside of the consideration that some people want me to believe that because his administration supported banning transgenders in the military. Listen, I have a lot of transgender friends. I've spoken to them. I've had interviews and discussions with them. Most transgenders do not support being in the military either. Eye opener. So the reality is that what touches our lives every day, for the most part, in my opinion, is what the conservative platform touches every day. And that is why I think that it's so easy for me to identify with those issues. I don't run around with a rainbow flag. I run around with a red, white, and blue American flag, because to me, that's far more important than it is that I have that I'm on one issue. And, you know, I worry about people that get on those one issues. Those concern me a little bit.
Fair enough. And well, Randy, thank you so much for coming on the show, and keep on fighting out there with your Americana truck.
Well, thank you. And maybe one day I'll see you when you get your picture in front of it.
Yes, definitely. Take care.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye. So that interview was recorded on May 28th, 2020. And following that interview, after I started promoting the interview on Facebook and social media, I received a message from somebody that was trying to prevent me from airing this interview. And this person was attacking Randy. And I really want to emphasize this. Politics is a very dirty game. And it's very difficult to see the truth and separate the truth from the lie in this very complicated world we're living in. I'm not going to repeat the accusations made against Randy, because I don't think that's the appropriate forum for that. I enjoy the conversation I had with Randy. I thought it was very valuable. I learned so much from his experience on the Trump campaign, and I thought he was a very good guest on this show. But my takeaway from this experience, and this has been very eye-opening, is that politics is not only polarizing, but it can poison relationships. It's a competitive game, and people will try to see what they can get away with. And I'm not speaking directly about Randy, I'm speaking in general. So guys, remember, be kind to each other, listen to each other, don't just scream at each other, be able to have productive conversations with people. And remember, you don't have to agree with a person 150%, but you can learn a lesson from anybody, just sitting down, having a conversation, getting to know that person at a deeper level. And as we've been starting to say here on Right Owl Politics, we want to go beyond the talking points and truly get into the human points and learning what makes people tick and understanding the complexity to people, because I think we learn a lot more if we take a moment and reflect on that. So thank you so much for tuning in this week. Remember, we're not your dad's political news show, so spread the word, share our episodes on social media, and invite your friends to tune in. We really appreciate all the love and support that you guys are showing for this program.